Hello and welcome to the Guelph Politicast. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico. Today I talked to Dr. Nicola Mercer, who, as you know, is the Medical Officer of Health for Wellington County, Dufferin County, and the City of Guelph. It's not often that someone makes three appearances on the Guelph Politicast, let alone three appearances in one year, but 2020 has been the official year of exceptional circumstances, and the reason why is the reason we're again talking to Dr. Mercer today. Still talking about COVID-19 is the topic of this week's Guelph Politicast. Now, the last time that Dr. Mercer appeared on this podcast, it was July, and things seemed to be going pretty good. Much of the province had been under Stage 2 reopening for weeks, and we were on the cusp of Stage 3. The virus wasn't gone, but the number of new and active cases was on the right trajectory. And there were at the times rumblings, advice from public health that people should not let their guard down, especially as fall was pending arrival. But we're now there. We're now more than 1 month into fall, and it seems like those warnings kind of underestimated just how hard COVID-19 would come roaring back as soon as it got a little colder outside. If you just watch the daily numbers, it seems bad, or if you just listen to the news about all the places that have had to go back to Stage 2, the outlook for the rest of the year does seem concerning. But doctors have been advising us to look at the trends and not the daily news, and the trends tell us where we are now is about where we expect it to be. So is this where Guelph expected to be? By the time you're listening to this, it's likely that Wellington, Dufferin, and Guelph has had more cases of COVID, but even in the resurgence we're seeing, the number of active cases has stayed around 50 at any given time. Our local assessment center has struggled occasionally to keep up with the testing capacity, but that's also not unusual, as cases started ticking up the last month. And while no one, especially Dr. Mercer, would say that we've got this COVID thing in the bag locally, it does seem like we're doing well managing the pandemic. But let's just not take that from me. Let's talk to the expert on public health matters in Wellington County, Dufferin County, and Guelph. So this week on the Guelph Politicast, we're joined by Dr. Nicola Mercer, who will tell us about the bigger picture in protecting our area from COVID-19, the secrets of our success so far, and whether or not she's concerned about a surge in new cases in our region as other regions around us struggle with their own increases. We will also talk about translating public health data and advice in layman's terms, the potential issues with the location of the assessment center now at Southgate Drive, and when an outbreak's not an outbreak at Holy Trinity School here in Guelph. And finally, we will also discuss the immediate future and the Christmas holiday season, how you can draw a distinction between whether or not you have the common cold or if you might have COVID-19, and looking a bit further into the future, might wearing masks become something of a regular habit for us even after we get a COVID vaccine? So I caught up with Dr. Nicola Mercer late last week via Zoom. Dr. Nicola Mercer, thank you so much for joining me today.
My pleasure.
And we know you are an exceptionally busy person this time more than normal, so we appreciate that. But let me just start like when we last talked in the summer. You don't get asked this very much, but how are you doing and how is the staff at Public Health doing? How are you guys coping with all this extra work that's been downloaded on you because of a pandemic?
Well, thank you for the question. And certainly public health staff have been extraordinarily busy. And we have a lot more public health staff than what we had back in March, as we have been frantically hiring in particular skilled individuals such as nurses and public health inspectors to augment our existing teams in key areas, in particular case and contact management, as well as our call center. So we continue to slowly make our way through this pandemic. And like everyone, all of your listeners, COVID fatigue is real for leaders. It's real for staff who are working in the pandemic, as well as it is for the population. And when I mean COVID fatigue, and I actually had this conversation with my staff just a week or two ago when we had our virtual staff day again, another new thing that we have to have as an agency. Everybody is virtual. I think what I was really trying to express to them is, and for all of us, is we really are at what I call the low point of the pandemic. And by that, I mean, we've been doing this long enough now that we just want it over with. And then when we look ahead, we think to ourselves, well, I don't see that it's going to be over with. We know that there are vaccines, you know, they're round in the turn, as I've heard our neighbor from the South say, but yet we actually don't know that. And we don't know when they're going to be announced. And with that, we see Christmas up ahead, and we're all being really kind of sad and thinking about what's Christmas going to look like this year. So when I say that we're actually at the bottom, I think we really are. And for those who are listening, I think the one thing I do want to hold out hope for is that, like anything that's been really bad in, over the last 100 years or so, they do end. And I believe fervently that we will have good news about a vaccine, whether it's in December or early winter, and that we will see vaccines, albeit in probably very limited quantities, but we will begin to see the vaccine in the year 2021. And when that happens, I think we'll all be holding out hope that things will be different.
I heard somebody say about rounding, the thing about rounding the curve is that you keep rounding the curve, you're going in a circle. I wanted to talk a bit about, because in recent days, I've heard a lot of epidemiologists and doctors talk about how maybe we're a bit too focused on the daily numbers. We, you know, one day it's 900, next day it's 800, the next day after that it's 1,000. It's the broader trends we need to be looking at. And, you know, your part of your job is to be a health communicator. So are you thinking along those lines too, that maybe we're focused a bit too much on the daily numbers and not enough on the trends? And you know, kind of what's the difference from your point of view in our area?
Well, that's a really a good question. And we have a lot of data on our website. And for those of your listeners who haven't actually visited it, if you go to Wellington Jennifer Gough Public Health, there is a public website and there's a status of cases. But what's really important on that particular, all the numbers, is there's a tab called Trends. And when you go to trends, you can also, you can choose daily or you can choose weekly. And I can tell you that I have my computer set up for weekly because I think weekly provides us with a very different picture. It provides us with a smoothing picture. And also on that site, we're able to differentiate between the three parts of Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph. So we have the County of Wellington, County of Dufferin, the City of Guelph, and they actually are quite different. And in particular, the County of Dufferin, with its proximity to Peel, has had some troubling trends that we continue to monitor. And Guelph also seems to be also much higher than the County of Wellington. So the Premier actually talked about, I believe it was yesterday, using a surgical approach. And I think there's a lot of merit to that, to be able to say that we're not all the same. Where you live can make a difference. And so therefore, I think looking not at any one day's numbers, but looking at what's happening on a weekly basis will give your viewers a much different picture of what's happening locally.
Speaking of waves and things, and I wonder if this is a concern of yours. I mean, the daily case count here and the weekly case count is relatively low, despite the vast area that, you know, we cover here. But, you know, you can also look at it this other way, that we had hotspots and looking in our area specifically, you know, Toronto and Peel, and then it stretches out to York. And then recently this week, anyway, we've been talking about maybe going back to stage two in Halton and Hamilton. And, you know, that makes you wonder, like, we're kind of situated between the two, between Halton and Hamilton. And if you know, are you concerned, like, maybe looking at this as, I don't know, a wave that is coming towards us that, you know, maybe you will have to, we might be looking at having to go back in stage two, like, because the further it goes out, or I guess the more things go into lockdown, the further out it comes, because you do have people sort of breaking those protocols. And I remember this story a couple of weeks ago about the people who live in Peel, but then go to York to use the gym there because it's part of the same chain. Mm-hmm. You know, it's, I'm not sure what the exact question is, but I think you understand the gist I'm getting at.
Well, I think this is a really important one. I think people sometimes feel powerless. Really, what can we do as individuals? And I continue to believe that my message is this. We are going to have COVID with us for another 12, 18 months, actually for quite a long time, even after that. Although when the vaccines come available, it will look a bit different. So I think we have to really get our mindset around, we have to find a way to live, work, go to school with COVID. And I'll have to say, if you look at our children, they're really showing us what that can be like. We are seeing cases in schools, absolutely are. But our teachers and in general, our schools, they're doing a fabulous job. We don't see transmission in schools. We actually don't see as much transmission in workplaces as what you would think. And when we do see it in workplaces, it's often traced back to the staff lunchroom or maybe the area where they go outside to have a smoke. So we can actually see these trends. If you look in Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph, you will see the number one driver of more than 60% of our cases is private social functions. So when people get together to see friends or family that don't live in your own house, you are putting yourself and others at risk. And if you own a business, if you go to a school, you know, you're putting your occupation or you're putting your school at risk. So it's not forever. It is not great. I can tell you, I really miss seeing my own family members on a regular basis, but it's not forever. The number one thing we have control of is we have control over the social connections of people in our lives. I'm not telling people to not stay connected. I'm saying we have to find ways of doing this, which doesn't involve taking off your mask, and being within 6 feet or being in the same room with people. So when you go out to a restaurant with people who aren't in your household, you got to figure out a way of maybe having separate tables where you can talk and be more than 6 feet away while your mask is off. It's really not rocket science. It's not about the doorknobs in our lives. It's all about the people in our lives.
Right. And that's something that's changed all along the course of the pandemic, is that the focus really is on the droplets now. And not so much on, you know, disinfecting deliveries we get.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And in fact, that is why masks are so important. And that's why I emphasize that, you know, when people have people over to their house, I guarantee you they're taking off their masks. And that is exactly what they shouldn't be doing. If that person or people in your life does not live with you, the same as you would in your own workplace, they come into your office or you're working beside them, you should all be wearing a mask. It is about our respiratory droplets. That's why when we look at let's use our gyms, for example. The gyms have done a lot, but they are a higher risk activity. And that's partly because people have their masks off when they're exercising and they're breathing deeply. And sometimes they're in an enclosed little room, like a spin room. So it does put you at increased risk. If any one person in that room with you has COVID, then the likelihood that you or others in the room are going to get it becomes fairly high. But what it also means, though, is that you can do things. I mean, I'm not saying don't go to gyms. I'm saying when you go, think about the activities you do while you're there. We want our gyms to stay open. We want people to be healthy. I want our restaurants to survive and thrive. Absolutely. I'm trying to be very thoughtful. And if I have to do any further population level actions, I want it to be based on data and evidence and really targeting problem areas, because economic health is so important to the mental health and the physical health of our population. And we know that that if we are not careful as a population, businesses, schools, our economy, mental health, they're all very fragile right now.
This may have something to do with the way maybe we consume information. You know, it comes in bite-sized pellets on tweets. And granted, I'm guilty of that as much as anyone. But, you know, when we have these conversations, I feel like when you kind of lay it out like these in these longer form conversations, it makes perfect sense. But I mean, how much of this do you think is maybe a communications issue where maybe we have to have like a YouTube video of you going through things like, you know, don't do what Donnie Don't does, kind of a children's style, where it's like, when you go to a restaurant, do this, don't do this. When you go to the gym, do this, don't do this. It's at once simple, but it's also complicated in sort of laying it out explanation-wise speaking.
Well, I think this would have been, if during this disease, people got it, you know, got dots or spots all over them, we would know who to avoid.
Right.
But we don't know who to avoid. And as human beings, we instinctively don't believe that it's our friends and family who can harm us. We really don't want to believe that. And of course, they don't want to harm us, but absolutely, those are the people that are most at risk. And if those who are younger put those who are older, so those of you who are young adults or teenagers right now, don't put your parents or your grandparents at risk. Of course they want to see you. Absolutely want to see you. Those are really important, those social connections in our society. But you have to remember that if you're breaking the rules and seeing your friends, that you could actually kill your parents or grandparents, depending on their age. We do see very high mortality rates, in particularly in individuals who are over the age of 80. So, and we occasionally see people who are younger too. People who are in their 40s, even in their 30s, can get really sick from this. So it is not something to be sniffed at just because you don't have it or don't think you have it or just because you don't know anybody who's had it. I just urge you to really think carefully. Nobody wants to hurt our parents or grandparents. So we all have to just for a little while longer, we have to just follow the rules.
I mean, that kind of also speaks to the isolation we have here in terms of how few cases we have. I think we've had in Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph about 800 some odd cases since March. We haven't had like a big outbreak at U of G like they saw at Western. And I wonder how much of this has to do with the mask. I mean, of course, you know this. We were an early adapter in mandatory masks. Came from you. We didn't have to debate it at City Council. Council has kind of, I mean, not that it's your authority as the public health officer, but the council was stayed out of your way. Let's just put it that way, to make that call. When I go out, I see a lot of mask uptake. It's to the point where if you see someone not in a mask on the bus or in the store, it sticks out like a sore thumb. Do you have data about, you know, what our masking rate is, like how well people are masking here, or is it just kind of observational?
Well, it would be predominantly observational data, although we are trying to figure out how to collect that data. But you are correct in terms of being an early adopter. And I have to say the population was fabulous. I mean, when I came out with my mask order, being the first in Ontario and certainly I think maybe the first in Canada, it wasn't popular. I mean, it definitely got a lot of feedback. And yet, for those 2 weeks, I remembered seeing people actually getting out of their cars and following good behaviors. I personally believe that that probably saved lives in our community and certainly saved people from getting sick. And it continues to be one of the most important things that we can do. I mean, obviously, I want people to have other good health behaviors, like keeping your hands clean. Practicing physical distancing is easy and it's hard. It's easy to say and it's really hard to do consistently, especially around people that we're trying to have a conversation with. Wearing a mask is also, it's easy to say and hard to do, and I'm very proud of our population for continuing to have those behaviors. And like you, I can honestly say that it stands out now, those individuals who don't wear a mask, or when you occasionally see one under a nose as opposed to covering their mouth and their nose. And we do in public health, I mean, if we get complaints, we do investigate. I mean, the idea is not to be punitive, but to be educational. And I think that's been a really good approach and one that has helped our community in a positive way to follow the right behaviors.
I don't know about you, but when I see someone wearing their mask off their nose, I do the kind of passive aggressive head nod.
Well, it's probably a little harder coming from me in my place. So.
Looking ahead a bit, and I mean, this has been made a point about places like South Korea and Japan, where they have 100 million people, but very few infections and deaths. The point has been made that it's because they already had a culture of masking, even in, you know, regular cold and flu season. I wonder, in your opinion, your educated guess, you know, once we have a vaccine, once this the worst is over, I guess. Does this become a learned behavior, or are we going to just all like rip off our masks and say never again and burn our masks like 1960s style, you know? Or
Well, you know, it's a really good question, and I'm not so sure I can predict, but I think one of the things it has taught us, though, is when we had our lockdown back in March, I mean, influenza just disappeared. It just dropped off the face of the earth. And mind you, so did a number of sexually transmitted diseases, as we weren't actually having those connections socially. But what it does tell us is that diseases that are respiratory, that are passed person to person, we actually have the ability to control these diseases with simple measures like keeping your hands clean and wearing a mask and keeping physically distant. So I'm not sure what will happen, but I actually do hope that perhaps in future years that mask use won't be so, considered to be so unfriendly. And if people have a bit of a cold, they will protect others from their cold. But just putting a mask on when they're out and about, in particular during a flu season.
And maybe newfound respect for being sick too. I mean, before COVID, it was not unusual for people to go into work sick because it's just the cold, it's just the flu, whatever. I gotta pay the bills or whatever reason. We never allowed ourselves time to be sick.
No, that's true. And I think one of the things that this particular virus has shown us is that diseases, which are diseases that go person to person, how quickly they can spread, in particular if you get a wedding or a place where there's lots of people. We have seen that one person in a place where lots of people are can what they call super spreaders, but really it's about proximity and the opportunity for the virus to go person to person. So those behaviors where if people were to stay home when they were sick, they were to protect others all the time, keep away, wear a mask. If we all practice public health measures, we actually can beat this virus and keep it at bay. Our healthcare workers protect themselves when they're working with people who have COVID. They don't come home with COVID-19, or at least now that we figured out how to manage it. In the early days, it was a bit different, but now you can see that our healthcare workers are doing a great job of protecting themselves while caring for people who have COVID-19. And those of us who aren't healthcare workers, who are, you know, out in the community, you don't have to get COVID-19. There are things that you can do to prevent yourself from getting it and to stay safe.
What is the, I guess, the process for people who have to work with people in health settings now? I mean, for those of us who have been fortunate enough not to have to go get a test and have been able to lock down in relative safety in our own homes and had very limited engagement with the public, you know, if I have to go to the hospital for something, what does that look like now? I mean, according to the regulations.
Well, it'll depend a little bit on what area of the province you're in, right, in terms of how much community COVID is there. But hospitals are just much more aware now that people, visitors in particular, can bring it into the hospital in addition to patients. So when people go to hospitals now, for the most part, they don't let visitors in the hospital. So it's very limited. So in the old days, you could just walk in, you know, have a little chat, 5 minutes, bring some flowers. And those are things of the past. For right now, hospitals are really being kept for patients. There are some visiting allowed, obviously, for humanitarian or emotional reasons. So it's not that we have zero people coming into hospitals, but what we do have to do is protect the vulnerable. So it's similar to long-term care homes. We want the staff who work there protect others. So staff now at long-term care homes, as well as our hospitals, are all wearing medical masks when they walk into the hospital. Many of them also, if they're not wearing glasses, are also wearing goggles or face shields. They wear gowns, they wear gloves when it's appropriate to do so. And these keep themselves safe, and it also prevents staff who may have the infection and not know about it right now from spreading it to other people. So our healthcare sector has learned a lot. We've learned a tremendous amount since March, when we had to deal with a virus that we knew very little about. It really, if you'd have asked me this question a year ago about coronavirus or SARS-CoV-2, I would have probably been quite blank, and I just wouldn't have known very much. And in the span of less than a year since we became aware of it, actually more like about 10 months, just think of everything that we've accomplished not just as a world, as a society, locally. Yeah, we've got a long way to go, but we really have come a long way in dealing with this virus.
A lot of on-the-job learning. I want to spend a couple of minutes to clarify a couple of things, because I mean, I'm sure you see it too, but I'm on social media. I see people talking about the local public health response, the five cases, and I think it was five cases of COVID at Holy Trinity, it wasn't classified as an outbreak because the five cases got COVID outside the school. I think though, and I think what gets a lot of people's goat is that I think for your purposes, it's scientifically not an outbreak because the outbreak wasn't at the school. But for when you hear five kids at a school have COVID and you know it, how easily transmissible it is and how close quarters it is at school sometimes, you know, parents sweat. I guess, you know, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it, but, you know, not to, like, be a backseat driver to how you do your job, but I think people don't quite understand the distinction between, you know, how you have five cases at a school, but it's not an outbreak.
Yeah, well, and that's a really good question. And I think, and I'm sure my answer is challenging sometimes for people to understand. And just to tie up that particular case, all classes at that school, they would be there today, except today's a PD day. So everybody's back in school on Monday. So I think, again, that shows you that in that particular case, we had five children who got COVID in five different ways outside of the school. So if you think about it, it could be five different children going to five different schools. You know, they got them from and all in very unique circumstances, but absolutely they didn't get it at the school. So it was either within their family or within a social circumstance that they got COVID. Now, just by chance, and I think I'm sure there's some statistician out there who's doing the odds on this, but just by chance, they all happened to be in the same school. So five classes went home because of five different exposures. If those five classes had been at five different schools, it would have told a picture, and I think the community would have been more worried about, look at how widespread it is, look at it, it's everywhere. But because the five kids were in the same school, it became a story of, look what's happening in that school. Right. And of course, what happened in that school is a really interesting and great example of how well the schools are doing. Five kids in a school, if you think about it, it was more than five teachers because there are often multiple teachers per classroom. So five teachers, let's say 10 teachers, five classes, they all go home. Nobody gave it to anybody else in the school. We didn't get any other kids in the classes. Those kids are all back in school now. So I think more than anything, it should tell your listeners that when you get COVID out in the community, it can affect your schools. So those private social functions that we continue to see, that I think people just think they can get away with it. I've driven down streets myself and I've seen the cars and I know there's a birthday party or party going on in the backyard. People think they can get away with it. What we do at home impacts our schools, our businesses, our communities. This is one of those times. It's not, you know, what stays in, you know, what happens in the home stays in the home. Unfortunately, right now, It isn't. We're all connected. So we all just have to, for now, follow some different behaviors just for a little bit longer.
I suppose, too, it would have been very different if all five kids had been in the same class. That would have been...
Well, if they'd have been in the same class, we would have been looking very hard at whether they got it from each other. And in fact, if they'd have been in the same class, it might have been more likely to be called an outbreak, depending on the findings of public health. Gotcha. So it was one of those good news, bad news stories.
Yes. Looking to the assessment center, it is in the south end. It's on Southgate Road. I have heard a lot of people online talk about the difficulty in getting to Southgate Road, especially for people who have to use transit. I know that there has since been a testing center opened at the Shoppers Drug Mart on Clare Road. I'm wondering how you feel about the city's testing capacity, though. Do we have Everything we need right now with those two locations, or, you know, maybe do we need some more? Are you looking at expanding the testing here? And do you have that assistance from the province?
So, well, I just heard today that there is going to be another pharmacy on Chancellor's Way that will be doing testing. But I have to just caution that pharmacy testing is for a different subset of the population. So they only do testing on people who are asymptomatic. And I think that's a really important distinction, whereas our assessment center is there for people who are symptomatic as well as for people in certain categories. I do know that currently, although I'm hoping that this is changing, but the turnaround time for testing at pharmacies can be quite long, 7 to 10 days right now. I'm very pleased to say that within our assessment centers, we can frequently get our results now 1 to 2 days. And if you call the Guelph Assessment Center, most likely you will get in the same day or at the very latest the next day. But most people who need a test are getting that test on the same day, and then they're getting results within the 48 hours, which is what we're aiming for. So do I think we need more testing? The one place that we sometimes forget is that we actually do have testing done at the University of Guelph. So the University of Guelph population, their students have access to testing through Student Health Services. So that's a really a big support for a very large population of young adults who, I agree, often don't have the best transportation. And I have spoken to our mayor about transit issues at the Guelph Assessment Center because I do realize that it is particularly problematic for those individuals who have to get there on a bus. And I know this is something that is being considered in the background to try and look at that issue.
Okay, perfect. Well, we're kind of getting to the end of our time, so it's now, you know, we're going to play the prognostication game a little. I know, you know, you mentioned this, the holidays are coming up, people are going to want that family togetherness. I mean, is there a rational way to expect that, you know, we can have a little bit of a bigger social bubble? I mean, assuming we do everything right for the next 6 weeks, that maybe the bubble can be a bit bigger for Christmas, or is this going to be virtual Christmas?
Yeah, well, I sure hope it's not a completely virtual Christmas. It's tricky. I would say that for individuals who are hoping to see, especially those who are older, their senior, their parents, that there are things that you can do to ensure that if you are going to see your family, that make it a safer event. So the first I would say is that for 2 weeks prior to you going to see whoever it is that you want to see, you should very carefully limit your social circle to your household. Monitor your symptoms. If you have any symptoms, please go get tested. But if you are very careful for that 2 weeks of quarantine, then you are going to decrease, not eliminate completely, but you are going to decrease your chances that you actually are infected with COVID and could spread it to those that you love. The other important thing is that maybe we need to have celebrations that aren't centered around food and drink. And that's a very sad thing to say at Christmas. Believe me, I know what I'm saying. But when we have our celebrations centered around food and drink rather than around people, we take our masks off. And so if it wasn't around food and drink, it was in more like the setting that we have at our workplaces, we would be able to socialize more in a safer manner than when people have taken off their masks. And often, especially if there's any alcohol involved, aren't practicing other public health measures. So this is certainly one that we're looking at, and absolutely limit the number of people. So if you're going to have break the rules, and you try and do so, maybe have some creative, maybe you have some Christmas walks, or even if it's in a bigger open area where you can, it's keep yourself physically distant from people and share. Maybe it's around, you know, doing a Christmas game as opposed to a Christmas dinner. Like trying to avoid circumstances where you take off your mask. Please try to keep yourself physically distant. And above all, for those that are vulnerable, please really rethink your plan and putting others at risk. It's not going to be the same Christmas this year. It really isn't. But I do think that we can modify our traditions for 1 year only. And I believe that Christmas of 2021 will be a much more normal looking Christmas for all of us.
That's going to be a double hit for the gyms, though, if we're telling people to eat less at the holidays. I guess maybe to wrap up, I mean, it's cold and flu season. One of the symptoms of a flu is high fever. One of the symptoms of a cold is a bad cough. For people who are trying to figure out, do I have the flu? Do I have a cold? Do I run to the pharmacy to get, you know, cold and flu medicine? Do I run to the assessment center to get a test? What's the best sort of like self-analyzing advice you can give to people? Or is it just like better safe than sorry time?
Well, the first thing that everyone should do is get a flu shot. And so in our area, Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph, public health, we still have high dose flu doses and our physicians still have high dose flu shots. So if you are over the age of 65, you can get a high dose flu shot in Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph. We also have regular vaccines. So please consider getting a shot of regular vaccine. I don't want to have any vaccine left at the end of this year. I want to put every dose in everyone's arms. We also have to remember that if you're practicing really good behaviors, if you're wearing a mask, keeping your hands clean, keeping distant, that you are much less likely to get a cold this year than you were in previous years. And that's a good thing. But if you should wake up and you have a sore throat, if you should have a sniffles, if you should feel particularly unwell, aches and pains, maybe a low-grade fever, I do need you to consider getting a COVID test. I know that nobody wants to leave our homes when we're not feeling that well. But the most important thing is to determine that you don't have COVID. Because if you don't have COVID, that's a good thing. But if you do have COVID, then we need you to stay home for 10 days from this, or until your symptom, 24 hours after your symptoms have resolved, in addition to the 10 days. So there are things that are important that we can do to keep ourselves safe, to keep others safe. And I think at this particular time, this pandemic, this is really important that we follow the advice very closely.
Well, solid advice, Dr. Mercer, as always. Thank you so much for your time. And unfortunately, I suspect we will have to talk again sometime in the future. But thank you again for your time today.
Oh, my pleasure as always. And I look forward to our next conversation.
And once again, that was Dr. Nicola Mercer, and you can get all the latest trends and statistics about COVID-19, as well as the latest public health advisories and advice at the Wellington, Dufferin, Guelph Public Health website, which you can find at wdgpublichealth.ca. And that's it for this week's edition of the Guelph Politicast. The music for the Guelph Politicast comes from KPM Classics and Sid Dale. The Guelph Politicast is usually recorded at CFRU at the University Center on the University of Guelph campus. And to learn more about CFRU, go to cfru.ca. You can download the Guelph Politicast on Wednesday from Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. And you can download it from the host at Podbean at guelphpoliticast.podbean.com. And when you subscribe to the Guelph Politicast channel, you will get an episode of Open Sources Guelph on Mondays and an episode of End Credits on Fridays. You can get in touch with me by email at adamadonaldson@gmail.com. Reach me through Twitter at adamadonaldson or at Guelph Politico. You can go to Guelph Politico's Facebook page at facebook.com/politicoguelph. And if you'd like to help build a locally sourced independent media outlet in the city of Guelph, then please consider donating to Guelph Politico. And you can find out how at guelphpolitico.ca/donate. And for all the latest local political news, you can check out guelphpolitico.ca, where there will be a new episode of the Guelph Politicast for you next week. And until then, see you next time.